Hi Pippa, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Dan. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. We've been trying to do it for a while now, and I keep having to postpone for different reasons, and then we just had the little technical issues. So thanks for your patience. So if you could just rewind and go as far back to, well, as early in your life as you like to, and then just talk through like how you've got to where you are today, that'd be amazing. And then I'll just get nosy on the way through.
Sure. I guess one of the most significant moments when I was younger that's kind of led me to where I am now, I guess, is probably when I was 14 or 15. And it's going to sound very old school now, but my mum used to be part of the Book People. I don't know if you ever remember that magazine.
Yeah, I do. That was like early Amazon stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's going back a while. And she used to buy us a book every month, like me and my sister and brother. And one month I had chosen The Beauty Bible, which had just come out, the book by Jo Fairley, which kind of reviews all these different products in the beauty industry and like rates them and says like why one's better than the other, and they have awards. And I ordered
Did your mum at that point have kind of like the style of books in mind that you were going to be choosing, and was she surprised, or was she very much just choose any book that you want to?
It was more like, yeah, choose any book that you want to.
Okay.
I was quite into, like, I guess it would be called like alternative medicine now at that age. So homeopathy and things like that, aromatherapy. Yeah. I don't know why, I was just really interested. My mum was a doctor, Western medicine doctor, but I had like lots of fascination in these like Eastern practices.
That's amazing. How was your mum? Did she have an interest in all those alternative therapies as well? Or was she, because she was a doctor, very much, why on earth are you looking at that, Pip? Like, this is the way to go.
She really had an interest. So yeah. It's funny looking back, because she used to give us like arnica when we had like for pain relief, and tiger balm for headaches, and all these things that were not, you know, instead of paracetamol and ibuprofen. So she kind of dabbled across both, which, yeah, it's kind of interesting. At the time I thought it was normal, but now I'm a bit older, I realised that, yeah, it was kind of strange for her to be using some of those alternative medicines too.
Are you a still big fan of the alternative medicines now?
Yes, yeah, very interested in, yeah, all those. I guess like Ayurveda is one of the big things that I have a lot of interest in. I don't think I'm very good at living the lifestyle, but I like reading about it.
Oh, likewise, yeah.
Really fascinating. Yeah, so this Beauty Bible, I read it, and that first edition, Lizzo Cleanse and Polish, was voted the best cleanser. And at the time, I grew up in the New Forest, like near Southampton, and it wasn't available there. But my sister went to uni kind of shortly afterwards in London, and I think they had the flagship store here then, and she brought me back some for when she came back from university.
Oh,
cool. I was like, wow, this is like so exciting, this product that had won this award that I've like never been able to get access to. And I became obsessed with it at a really young age. So I guess you know it, it's very famous, but it's a cream that you massage into your skin and then use a hot cloth to remove it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, 17 years ago was quite advanced for like a teenager to be to be using this kind of product, and all my friends like didn't use anything on their skin, and I had this like very elaborate routine from quite a young age. So yeah, from there I was just like really, really hooked on skincare, and didn't really know what I was going to like do as a career. And it got to going to college, I think, and choosing A levels, and I went to the clothes show still when I was at school, so it'd been like 16. And yeah, went to the clothes show and picked up a prospectus for London College of Fashion, and they did the cosmetic science course. Now, I had never heard of that before. It was a complete fluke. I picked up this one prospectus, and inside there was this course, which kind of combined, well, skincare, the thing I was already obsessed with, and also the science, because I was kind of naturally much better at maths and science than anything else, but I was kind of desperate to do something more creative.
Amazing. That is lucky, because
so, yeah, then discovered
in the UK to do it, is there?
I don't think there were any others at the time.
That was the only one.
Kind of the only.
Wow.
I think so, yeah.
So if
yeah,
is that when you flick through and you came across it? So you're like, wow, that's for me. So if it wasn't in there, were the chances are you didn't go seeking out that?
No, I didn't know it existed.
So it could have been a whole different route. Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, I just kind of knew it was for me straight away, and I still did science A levels. And that was it. From seeing that course, I was like, that's what I'm doing. That's the job I want. That's like my future. I know it. And so I was like really, really fortunate that happened at a very young age.
And what at that point when you looked at it and you were like, that's the job for me, what was the job you thought it would be at that point? Developing?
Making skincare, yeah, formulating skincare.
For yourself, or did you think you'd be working for someone at that point? Or you hadn't thought of that?
I thought I'd be working for someone.
Okay.
Yeah. And then interestingly, when I was at college, I knew I was going to do this. I chose my A-levels, and then went to college, and the Soap and Glory brand launched into Boots when I was probably like 17. And I got the Boots magazine. That was like one of my favorite, you know, because it's all about skincare. So I got the Boots magazine, and there was an interview with Marcia Kilgore in there as she just launched Soap and Glory into Boots. And I read it and I was like, wow, this woman's amazing. Like, she knows everything. Like, this is who I want to be. Like, this is the woman. Like, so even just having like, having read about her from such a young age and being so like inspired by her kind of journey and achievements. Yeah, I guess another thing that cemented me into wanting to kind of go into that industry, this industry. So I actually had that interview on my wall, and I wrote in a bucket list when I was 19. I just started university, and it was in my bucket list to meet her. And that was like, I guess she was like a big inspiration for like wanting to succeed in the industry. So then, yeah, I went to university, did the cosmetic science degree. It's amazing. Really like well connected in the industry. The tutors are brilliant. They have like really incredible guest lecturers from different companies, and the course is so small that you just get like so much contact time, and yeah, so amazing experience there. And I did a placement at Reckitt Benckiser in my like third year.
Okay, how was that?
It was great. They're a really impressive organization, actually. They have a really really great company culture. And even though I was a placement student and kind of the bottom of the ranking, really, it never felt like that. They would promote, like, if you had unique ideas you wanted to experiment with, they were kind of really good at promoting people to kind of go beyond necessarily what their job description was and to like do the best kind of work that they could do. And
we've really heard that a couple of times recently, that they're like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they were really great. Like, I had a brilliant boss and boss's boss. So, yeah, I had a really good time there. And also, it's in Hull, which I think I'd never been there before, but it's like a very awesome like city to live in. Like, it's very different to London. And I think London's very difficult to be a student because no one cares. It's not very student friendly, but in Hull,
it's very smaller, student.
You kind of get to know people. Yeah, so it was nice to have that kind of year, which felt more like university even though I was working.
Sure.
So then came back and graduated, and then went up to Nottingham to work at Boots. So I was working in their R&D centre there in D19.
So was there not the option to go to Ricketts?
I didn't want to go back to Reckitt. I had a great time there, but it wasn't what I wanted to kind of do longer term. I actually wanted to stay in London, but it's very difficult to kind of find formulation roles So I was kind of looking at where I was still reasonably like close to kind of have and still come back to London quite a lot.
Okay, so Nottingham it was.
So we went there for 2 years. We were working on number seven and Boots Laboratories brand, doing the formulations, which was really good actually. I learned a lot. It's obviously a very specific organization, lots of process, lots of thinking and put into every project. You know, it's very kind of risk averse in their approach, but really interesting to learn kind of how a very established company kind of goes about things.
And were they very different to Reckitt's?
They were, actually, yeah. I felt like they're not wildly different, but they have quite a specific structure, which is different to Reckitt. It felt quite flat, even though it wasn't, whereas Boots is quite, has specific levels.
Okay.
But it was, yeah, it was a good couple of years. I learned a lot.
And then what happened then after Boots? So how was Nottingham actually compared to Hull?
Nottingham was great.
That's quite a student city as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I definitely felt like it was really fun being in Hull for 1 year and having like the student life. But having been used to living in London for kind of 3 years, then graduating and then going to a student city was quite difficult.
Okay.
I was kind of ready for it to be, but I lived in a really nice area, so West Bridgeford, which is kind of out of the city, and that felt a lot more, less studenty. So it was good. They have a good food scene there, lots of good live music. So
cool. Good food scene is always important. What prompted you to start looking for a new job while you were at Boots?
I think I really wanted to be somewhere much smaller. I think I was really itching to kind of have more influence than I had there and wanting to kind of go somewhere that was smaller, more agile, kind of experimenting a bit more. And also I wanted to move back to London. So my partner was here. We were together when I went to Nottingham. So that was like a factor, and my family also in London. So started looking for roles originally in R&D, but it's very, very difficult to find those kind of roles in London. So I ended up I didn't really know NPD existed actually outside of formulation. I thought it was kind of brand and then formulation. I didn't realize there was like an NPD kind of that combined them. So when I found out about that, I thought that was like really interesting because I did really enjoy some aspects of the lab, but also it can be quite repetitive sometimes when you're formulating the same product and just tweaking things. So I was kind of itching to move to something that was a bit more varied and had a bit more of the creative elements, which I think that side of NPD does have. So I got to Edgar, which is kind of a smaller than Boots makeup brand.
What was the brand, sorry? Just to off a little bit then. What was it?
It's called Illa Masca.
And how did you come across those guys?
I can't remember actually. I hadn't heard of the brand when I was applying for jobs. I think it must have been on must have just found the job.
So you were just looking online at jobs available and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But they're a really cool brand. They're doing something very different in the industry. So at the time, their creative director was Alex Box, who is just phenomenal in many ways. She's obviously an artist and makeup artist, but also just like very kind and inspiring human being. So she used to design the collections for Illa Masca, which would be quite inspired by something that she felt was really beautiful, which could be something completely abstract, like, a a desert scene or something quite visual and artistic rather than how it's done in a lot of places, which is, I guess, based on kind of commercials and data and forecasted trends. This was very much more kind of visual and artistic. So that was really fun designing collections with her. She would have a vision for how she wanted to do that kind of photo shoot and how she wanted to create the look at the end of it. And then you sort of work backwards to create the products around that that would make this vision that she had in mind. So that was great working with her. She's really creative and really inspiring. So it was a very small team, a young team as well. So it was very agile and up for experimenting. I think the business...
Sounds like the polar opposite to Boots then.
Yeah. It was really the polar opposite of Boots. And they kind of really relished not being commercial in a lot of ways. That they were sort of like the antithesis of commercial beauty. They wanted to be different and creative and promote like that beauty could be in all forms and you didn't have to wear your makeup in X way or contour in X way. It was all about experimenting in colour and things like that. So it was great. And they sort of made a point of not looking at the trend forecasting sites and not trying to, you know, look at the same resources everyone's looking at, which was really interesting because then they kind of ended up doing things that then ended up in all the forecasting sites. So it would be the collections we were doing ended up being taken as...
Well, so you're kind of leading the trends. Forecasted.
I mean, I'm not sure if that's what was great. It did seem that we would launch something and it would later be shown as a future trend.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was coincidence or that people were looking to the brand for that, but so that was kind of funny. So I had a great time there. I was there for a couple of years and I learned loads, but kind of I was working, it was a very small team and I was sort of managing the NPD, but I didn't really have a lot of experience. So I kind of knew that I was maybe learning some bad habits or like not necessarily having someone who was really experienced in NPD to learn from.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I kind of got to the point where I was like, I think I need to find somewhere where I can like learn in a bit more structured way. So I actually reached out to, applied for a role, which was from a recruitment agency that had tried to place me when I was leaving Boots, but hadn't. And I contacted them about a role. And then he called me the next day saying, I've just seen that you've applied for this role, but I've got something else that I'm not advertising yet, but I think it might be perfect for you. I was like, okay, I'm listening. He said, does the name Marcia Kilgore mean anything to you? And I was...
was the article still on the wall at this point, or have you got out of that?
It's not on the wall, but it is still in a book, which the bucket list is also in, which I still do own.
Do you...
that original article.
Because I talk to people a lot about like vision boards and goal setting and stuff like that. Has that ever been something you've ever considered? Because a lot of people would, if they've got an idea of like a business they want to go down a house, they often like cut things out and they stick them up there and they look at them all the time. Is that something you buy into, or is this just all a coincidence?
It's something I'm starting to think there must be something in, because there's been several quite significant examples where this kind of thing has happened, where I've like specifically, you know, thought about something very niche and then later on that has happened for some like unknown reason. So I'm starting to think there must be something in it, but I've never kind of actively, you know, spent time trying to, you know, manifest. I do think there must be some logic in it.
Oh no, that's fascinating. So he said that and you were like, wow, definitely, what is it?
Yeah, exactly. I started word vomiting about the interview on the wall as a teenager, and he was like, okay. So basically, I set up the interview. I was so nervous because I was like, this is it. Like, I have to get this job. Like, this is it.
And who interviewed you?
Saskia.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so yeah, I don't think I could have handled it.
Your article on the wall.
Yeah. So Saskia interviewed me, and I thought it had gone really badly, and I was really gutted. And then I got the call from the recruiter saying, you know, they've invited you in for the second interview. So yeah, and the second interview actually ended up being off the back of Cosmoprof. So we'd gone to Cosmoprof Hong Kong, we'd gone to see a supplier in Thailand, and then I'd come back, and I was really sort of jet lagged, and I had the interview scheduled for that day, and I was feeling really not good, and I had to get off the tube twice on the way there because I was really just like dizzy and not feeling well at all, and I was really stressed out. Anyway, so I got there, did the interview, which felt like it went okay, but I was still just not convinced that I'd nailed it. And then yeah, when they offered me the job, I was kind of like just so flabbergasted, I guess. It's funny now because Saskia said, actually on the call, she felt that my response to getting offered the job was like really indifferent.
Oh really?
It's just like so not the emotion that I was feeling. I think I must have just been so quiet and like processing. So that's quite funny. But yeah, it was in the interview, because it was a year before Beauty Pie launched, they were under really kind of strict NDAs, no one could say anything. So, you know, at the end of an interview, it's like, do you have any questions? And I had so many questions, but they didn't answer any of the questions. So I knew it was to do with makeup. Knew it was going to be makeup brands. Well, at the time they were looking for an MPD on MPD person, and I knew it was Marcia, but I didn't know anything else about it. And I was asking, you know, who's your main competitor and all these kind of other things, and basically they wouldn't answer any questions. So I didn't really know what I was going into, but I thought, you know, it's Marcia, so yeah, I was going to take the role. So
yeah, you had to, didn't you, at that point?
Yeah, exactly. So then I joined, and they did the kind of presentation, probably on like day three, the presentation of like what the vision of Beauty Pie. And yeah, I just remember just being like hairs on end, just so like, whoa, this is a big deal. And I get to be here with this like really small group of people, like building this from day one.
Yeah, so amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really amazing experience. Yeah. So I stayed there for a few years, almost 4 years in the end. But after probably a year, I kind of realized I wanted to investigate how I could build a business myself.
Wow.
So I'd spoken to them about reducing my hours there and went down to kind of 4 days a week after about 2 years of work.
And were you open? Did you tell them the reason why you wanted to reduce down your hours?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I said I was kind of scouting what that might look like in the future. It wasn't like an immediate, you know, I want to go and do something else, because I loved it there as well.
That's really supportive of them as well then, isn't it? To actually accommodate that.
Yeah, they were amazing, really amazing.
And is that, and kind of really, you wanted to do your own thing because of the experience you'd seen Marcia create something, and you'd seen other people, and you're like, wow, I'd like to run something similar and create something? Or what was the thought process?
I guess so. I don't, my parents aren't entrepreneurs, but my aunties and uncles are, and my granddad was, so I think there is some streak in the family maybe. Yeah. As well. And yeah, like the energy of Beauty Pie year one was just the most incredible thing, just when nobody else knew about it, and it was kind of our secret that we were building. Yeah, it was amazing. And I guess
that was really like a big sense of belonging, wasn't it? Was everyone if you ever wanted to get a buy-in for something and make people really feel part of something, when you're working on something so secretive, it must have really pulled the team together.
Yeah, definitely, because we weren't able to tell anybody. So, you know, my partner, like my friends, nobody knew anything about what I was doing. And my friends, it was funny because I was there for a year and they used to say, I feel bad, but I've forgotten where you work. And I was like, no, I just haven't told you what the name is because it's all secret.
Did they not think you were like some CIA agent or something?
Maybe. I think they had some theories, but yeah, nothing even close.
Oh, I've always wanted to say I could tell you, but if I do, I'd have to kill you. And you're a kind of actually living and breathing that.
Yeah, it was really hard though. I don't think I'm naturally very good at keeping something so exciting kind of secret. So that was terrible. A year of not being able to talk about it. But yeah, we managed it. So yeah, that was great. So I'd reduced my time there and started looking at what else I could do. And then I actually started a course in like plant science. And which was really interesting, but really kind of a lot of Latin and quite technical.
Yeah.
So I think at the time I was thinking about exploring more like holistic therapies and what that might end up looking like. And then I guess kind of during this, my whole career, you probably get the same, but people, friends and family that are not in the industry kind of asking questions about what they should be using and is this new launch any good and all of those kind of things. And even at Beauty Pie, I was developed a skincare line there. So even within Beauty Pie, colleagues would be asking for help with XYZ concern and XYZ concern. And what samples could I get from the, you know, to share with them to use? And basically wasn't seeing the very obvious that this was like a real need in the market until I went on a hen do. And it was, the Ordinary had just launched and it was obviously really impossible to shop because all the products are named after the actives and nobody at the time knew what the actives did.
Yeah.
So I was on this hen do that everyone was really excited about this corny brand, but they just had no idea like what they were supposed to buy from there. And I just remember they would say, oh, is this one good? And they'd read out the ingredients and I'd say, oh, this is what it's going to do. Like, how do you know that? Like, because the ingredients do.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like this realization that, you know, you know what you know, and it's sometimes you don't realize that it's not, you know, that maybe it's like a specific knowledge that you have because of what you do.
Yeah, you think everyone knows it and it's not that big a deal, but then you realize, oh, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So then, I started thinking, oh, maybe I should be doing this. Maybe I should be helping people choose the right skincare because, you know, I know this and people ask me all the time. So actually after that hen do, I started, I pulled together this kind of questionnaire. People could kind of tell me everything about their skin history, their diet, lifestyle, everything like that, and I would kind of review it and research and come back to them with a skincare plan. And I was just kind of experimenting.
That was all manual, so you were going through every single answer and then trying to, I suppose you'd have to link one answer to another answer. And then
it was super manual. It took me like almost to do like one person.
How long?
Like a whole day of just like reading everything, researching their specifics. It was a really lengthy process and I wasn't charging anything at the time because I was kind of experimenting with, could this be a viable business? But I was asking for feedback on how much people might pay and things like that. So I did that for a while and then realized, you know, this is something that people are interested in and it seems like there's value in and people are getting good results from the products that I'm recommending. I guess it kind of validated that it was a viable business and there was a market need. My brother helped me build a kind of platform which had it was like a stock website which had a type form integrated, so people could fill out a type form, and then I had a database of product, and I could recommend the product over email through that. So it was kind of,
but still manual then, was it? You were still, but you were just going getting paper surveys. They were just filling it in on the form.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd sort of done loads of research and had this like product set, so I didn't have to kind of do all the new research every time. I just kind of knew that person needed this kind of product, so these were the options, and then choose the best from there. So it was still a manual process, but probably took me like 20 to 30 minutes per person instead of a whole day.
And did you go, it's fortunate you had your brother then as well, so, but you knew you wanted to have a website like that, and then you started chatting, or did he suggest one day, why don't you put this on a website? How did that?
Yeah, so he is a UX designer. So he was living with us at the time because he'd just moved back from the US. He lived in New York for, almost 10 years. So he just moved back and was figuring out jobs and things. And he was living here and said, you know, this is what you need to be able to, like, make this easier for yourself and make it, you know, test with a wider population of people.
Yeah.
So he'd built that. It was great. So that really helped. And then, so I was kind of working on this on the side of Beauty Pie. I'd gone down to 3 days a week at this point to kind of get my time on it, and started, you know, social media and trying to like grow the accounts. And then...
Were you charging at this point, Pip?
No, still not charging. But at this point, getting commission from product sales.
Ah, that's what I was going to ask. Okay. Was it being sold on your website, or you just have like a code that they could use? And
it was just linked. Yeah. So they could click the link and go through to purchase on Look Fantastic. Or...
Yeah, I understand. Okay. When you'd identify the brands, you would then approach the brands and say, I've got this website. Can I put your link on, and then you just give me some commission on every sale that comes through my website?
Yeah, so the big retailers, like the Look Fantastic, et cetera, have affiliate programs that they're part of. So
yeah.
Like Awin, for example. So you register with the affiliate program like Awin, and then they're linked to the retailer. So you don't really need to have specific conversations. You can just register through these sites and then you get approved.
Ah, okay. Like the Amazon affiliates and stuff like that. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
So it was like very easy to set up, which is why I was like, I'll just do it like that to begin with.
Did you know about the affiliate links before this, or did someone suggest you do that sort of thing?
I don't remember, actually. I probably didn't know. Actually, I think I must have known about it from Beauty Pie.
Okay.
I think there was, we had someone who, we used affiliates in certain things. So I think that must be how I learned about them.
Okay. Because it was quite new to me. I heard a few friends talking about it, especially from different, they're like influencers in certain areas, and they're just directing people for all the time and links and things like that, and they mentioned the affiliates. I was like, I don't really know much about it, to be honest, and they started telling me to have a look at it, and I was like, that makes sense. So it's quite a good option for a lot of people, especially if you've got a social media presence, I guess, as well.
Yeah, definitely. It does require like a lot of volume, I think.
Yeah. So are you doing a lot of volume at that point?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I was working a lot of hours for not a lot of reward, but it was, it's all learning. I think it was quite a difficult few months, I think, after I'd gone down 3 days at Beauty Pie. I was trying to do this other thing, and the other thing was really hard, and it wasn't really giving any reward. And then I had Beauty Pie, which was like, I loved the job there, and I loved the team, I loved the role, I loved the company, but I kind of wanted to do the things myself, even though I kind of didn't like enjoy a lot of the things I was doing.
I think it's definitely like one of the hardest things about starting your own business, especially when it's not like a business doing the thing you know how to do. It's, you know, obviously what I was doing was related, but it wasn't product development. So you have to then learn like about marketing and SEO and like tech stuff and all these other facets, which are, it's just part of starting your own business. You have to do everything, but you're not very good at everything. So then yeah, suddenly you're spending 90% of your time doing stuff you're not very good at. And then that makes you think you're not good at anything. So I think it's a kind of difficult thing to get through as a business when you start a business. But I think then just recognizing that, of course, you don't know how to do all these things that you've just started learning how to do, and that's okay. And then just kind of carrying on. So that's kind of where...
Did you have a point when you were coming to that realization, it was like, no, I don't know it all. I don't even like doing it. And actually, I love Beauty Pie. Were you ever at the point where you're like, oh, I've just got to go back full time and forget about this? Or you were like absolutely blinkered. Although this is happening and I don't like it all, it still has to be the route I'm going to go down. And at some point, yeah, I can delegate and or do something else.
Yeah. I think I've got to give it a proper go. I've got to do it, like, at least got to do it full time. And I've got to do it for enough time to really know that I did it.
Yeah.
It was definitely tempting to you know, go back to full time Beauty Pie. Sure. I loved it, but I had to see kind of where it went. So I left Beauty Pie in August last year, and I went to an event a couple of weeks later at Google Startup Campus. And sort of this whole time I'd been looking for like a technical co-founder, because that's not something you can teach yourself, I guess, very easily, the kind of tech side of things. And I knew if I wanted to have a scalable business, it needed to rely on the technology. So I've been looking for a really long time, and the worlds of tech and beauty are generally quite separate, and someone who has the skills of technology tends to not also have the passion for beauty. So I'd spoken to a few different people, but finding someone who kind of got it and was excited about the idea and also had the skills was really, really hard. So I'd kind of even given up on that, and I was just thinking I would just build it more organically. And then I went to this event, and I bumped into a friend who I'd met at another event pitching my then business, and she told me about somebody else who had started a very similar concept, and she was telling all about her, and I was like, oh, you know, damn it, her sounds really good. And then at the end of that event, this person that she'd been talking about was there at this event. And she'd been sat with somebody who I'd been speaking to at networking. So he had kind of brought her over and said, oh, you know, because you need to meet Catherine. You both just told me about your businesses. You need to talk. And then my friend Ricky had said, this is who I was telling you about. You have to, you know, you have to talk. She had been looking for somebody from the industry as a co-founder. And I'd obviously been looking for somebody technical. Her background is, she's a data scientist. Background is in data science and machine learning. So we kind of met, and both, I think, knew that we had been looking for someone exactly like the other for a really long time.
It's like a love story.
we've likened it to that before. It was mad. And we met for coffee that week, and she said, look, do you kind of want to work together on this? And so she was working out of the Founders Factory Accelerator in West London. And so she was already in there. She had some funding from them. They're backed. They have corporate partners within different sectors. So their beauty corporate partner is L'Oreal. So she kind of had buy-in from in the accelerator and had all the kind of technical knowledge as well. So that was amazing. We kind of spent a few months figuring out what that, you know, figuring out, you know, agreements and everything with all the parties, and then started working together from last year, really, to towards the end of last year. And yeah, it's been, we've just grown so quickly. We've achieved so much in such a short space of time. Partly due to the help of, you know, the accelerator and the funding that we've had.
Yeah.
Kind of been able to just roll with it.
And how was the relationship? Because I suppose it's always, even when you're starting a business with someone you've known for a long time, it will have its challenges. But if you've been, how do you work both? I'm not making myself very clear. have you both got different personalities and different strengths, or are you quite similar?
We are quite similar, actually. We, in the initial phase, when we were trying to figure out if we could work together, because I actually had started business with a friend initially, and that didn't end up going, and I sort of vowed never to do that again.
Yeah.
So in the beginning of my meeting, I asked her Myers-Briggs, and she's the same Myers-Briggs as me, which I think is quite an unusual Myers-Briggs as well. And so that was not necessarily a good thing. I thought would prefer to be different. But it is good because I understand her very well, like how she processes things, because we have the same personality type. So that helps, I guess, to understand like where each other are coming from. We also did some questions on like how, you know, we were advised to kind of ask each other questions and write down our answers and then share them and then talk about them. So stuff like, how many hours a week are you expecting to work? Because, you know, something like that can be, you get entrepreneurs who are, you know, 90 hours a week, and some that are trying to do it for, you know, less time than that. So those kind of things are really important to make sure we were aligned on like our expectations of what the business was going to entail, how long we're going to be working on it, those kind of things. So we were nervous going into it. It was advice that we had to do it, and it was amazing advice. And I think we were.
Where did the advice come from? Because that's amazing. You're writing it down about, because some people want to go into business just because they don't want to work many hours, and then some go into it thinking it's going to be something I love and I'll give everything to it. And I guess some are like, oh no, just a standard working week we call. So where did the advice come from?
So that came from someone at Founders Factory, so the accelerator that we're in.
Incredible.
I think they build companies all the time. So I think they just have seen it and they know these are like the common things that people fall out about. So they asked us to do that. And it was great advice. I definitely would recommend it to anybody considering working with somebody else in that capacity, to kind of really ask those difficult questions at the start, because it's easy at the start for every pair, like every partnership is easy at the start. You have the honeymoon period, and then when things start to go wrong, you know, it can really go wrong. So we asked the questions and we were really aligned on everything, which was a relief, because I think at that point we were really excited to work together and we didn't want, you know, the logic to get in the way. But it didn't. We were really aligned on everything. So we just went for it. And it is interesting, and it is like a romantic relationship in a way, because, you know, you're spending a lot of time with this person and you have to get to know them as a team. Like, you have to become a team. You have to, you know, understand when, like, how they process things when they're annoyed or upset, or like when they don't agree with you. You have to figure out how to manage conflict and how to still like want to work together again the next day. So it's been like actually quite easy. I think we're both very similar in lots of ways, and we both have a lot of similar views on stuff, so there's not been any significant, you know, conflict that we've had to overcome yet. But I do.
How long has that been?
A learning. It's been really since September last year.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then we were working together kind of not every day until maybe December, and then started working together really from December. So then we've obviously had the lockdown where we've been working together remotely.
So what is the business model now with the website? Is it still labor intensive than you guys recommending the products, or is there more of an algorithm associated with it?
So right now we have a team. So we have a team of 5 licensed estheticians, and they are our skin experts. So the user gets assigned to one of these experts who creates their routine. So they can either do photo consultation, which is free at the moment. So the user answers some questions and uploads images, or they can have a video consultation, which is like a 20-minute chat with the expert about their skin history, current routine, etc. And then that's a paid service, which the esthetician then builds a regime from all the information they've given. So right now, still a manual process. The intention is that that will not always be the case, but obviously you need volume of data before you can do anything kind of useful with it.
Yeah. And is it, so are they repeat customers, or is it kind of someone comes on one, does a test or a consult, has a consultation, and then that's them, you've told them the products to buy? Do you make the money through affiliate programs still and commissions?
So we we make commissions from the products, but we also charge for the services. So we that's a second revenue channel.
And so is it a you're frozen a bit. Have I lost you?
Can you hear me?
Oh, you're back. That's cool. I was just marking down the time. That's cool. So you said that the second income stream. So do they... I'll edit that bit out, if I remember. so do you get the repeat purchase, or is it just a one-off?
Yeah. Lots of people come back to have second consultations. So we sell consultations in bundles as well. So one of the most popular is in a set of 3. So they would buy 3 up front, and then they have 3 different consultations. And usually the first one is kind of creating a base regime. With a lot of our users, kind of blemishes is the key concern, but a lot of the time that comes with kind of inflammation that may need to be treated first. And then as their blemishes improve, they look for products to address kind of the pigmentation that's left after the blemishes have healed, and so it tends to be kind of this 3-step process to getting their kind of long-term regime. And we have users also that come back in to buy products that don't necessarily book in for consultation. You know, if they're just repurchasing the same products they had after their first consultation, then they'll just come in and purchase them from the platform.
Cool. And then so just before... Were you working together in the same office prior to this, and have you had to separate, or have you always been working from home or remotely?
So we were working together, in an office before lockdown. So we've been working remotely since, but we're on Google Meet basically all day together.
Oh, okay.
Just
there in the background.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. That's fascinating. Did when you were do you miss being part of a bigger team, or do you just love it now doing your own thing?
I haven't really had time to think about that. I think I love the flexibility of just thinking, like, you know, what's the next most important thing we can do, and then just like doing it. And like that speed and like being that agile is just amazing. We hired our first employee. So we have the estheticians work on a freelance basis, but we hired our first employee who started 3 weeks ago remotely. So that's been interesting. It's really cool. Even just having the 3 of us now, like the output is so much more than just when it was 2 of us. It's like really significant, like what can be achieved with one extra person. So
that's amazing. Yeah. That's because that's what you want it to be like, don't you? You don't want to sit there thinking, well, that hasn't made much of a difference. So that's incredible that happens. Amazing. Did you, what's been the hardest bit so far? Because it sounds like everything's gone like swimmingly.
I definitely think the hardest, before I met Catherine, that was really hard. And I think I like doubly, triply like respect any solo founders, because it is really, really not easy. And then when you've only got yourself to tell you that you can do it, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Trying to do that every day. So yeah, that was a really difficult time, and like trying to carry on, even though it was really hard and I wasn't enjoying it, and I kind of was leaving the dream job to do it. It was really difficult. I think it is really like the men's attitude is like the hardest thing to crack. I think if you can crack that, you can do anything. I think like the physical stuff you have to do is what it is. It's the psychological part that is really hard to overcome.
Yeah, and then finally, did you ever tell Marcy that you had her article and interview on the wall?
I told her about it when I'd been there for 2 years, and it was my LinkedIn anniversary, and she sent me a LinkedIn message saying, "Oh my God, 2 years, like amazing." And I was like, okay, I think it's time. So I responded saying, you know, thanks so much. Like, it's been such a dream to work with you. Like, I actually had it on a bucket list to meet you, when I was, you know, like 10 years ago. And she is just so sweet. She responded saying, it was on my bucket list to meet you too. I just didn't know.
That's a nice response, isn't it?
Yeah, she's so humble. I think she doesn't. I think she gets a bit. You shouldn't like praise like that necessarily. But I think she's, yeah, but really sweet. Obviously, I'm screenshotting that family who I've known through the whole journey. Going, look what she said. But yeah, so I kind of half told her. I was happy. Also told her the full story behind the scenes, but I never asked.
Amazing. And then, so what's the website? If people want to check out what it is you're doing now, where do they find you guys?
So it's renewed.co, so spelled renewde.co.
And are you on social media as well?
Yeah, social media, the handle is also at renewed.co. We're on Instagram. Yeah.
Amazing. Thanks for today, Pip. It's been amazing to chat to you again. And sorry it's taken so long.
No problem.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
Cool. You too.
Cheers. Take care.